This talk was given by Michael Yukon Grody at the Zen Center of New York City. Yukon is a senior monastic in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
So I just gave beginning instruction to about 10 new people that just walked through the doors. It's great to see new people here. And then I see all my friends, all my Sangha friends. I know most everybody here. It's always so great to have that heart connection and see you here. My name's Yukon. For those of you who don't know me, I'm the monk gardener of the monastery. And we come down, the monks come down every 6 weeks or so to help out down at the temple. So here we are. We're coming together in this space. It's very particular. What we call a refuge, a place of sanity. We call it a place of sanity. Here, seeking a path or to continue to let this practice unfold. It's a gift to find a path like ours to travel on, but it's not easy. It's not an easy one. It takes all of the patience we can muster, forbearance, commitment. And because it's not like something, we can't put it in a compartment and say we know it. It's not like that. It's not a practice of the intellect, but of the heart. And we sense something, but what? You know, there's an understanding involved, wisdom involved, that can be helpful. To come here means we are seeking a way to find some clarity in our life, to help more closely examine what our suffering is actually about and close the gaps around how we see the suffering of others and come closer. To come closer is what this is about. Then perhaps better able to respond with an open heart and mind, to see if this practice can resonate in us or continue to resonate in us as time goes on. You know, I know it's helped me. So we are all here. It's kind of a vulnerable encounter, you know. It's because we're all seeking something that can seem to be quite elusive, you know. Attempting to calm these fractious minds of ours in very turbulent times, you know. It's vulnerable because we are here asking for help. So we're saying, right now, we're putting ourselves in a position and we're saying, oh, I don't know everything, you know. Maybe I can receive some assistance, some help in finding a way to travel. So the Buddha is often seen as kind of a doctor. You know, the kind of medicine we receive are the 40 years of his teaching. Yet it is always up to us how we use what is given to us. How we go about relieving our suffering and what is the nature of this reality. He teaches us about how everything, every single thing is interrelated. Every single thing is relational. Cannot exist on its own. Yet we often act as if we are independent entities and can do this on our own. I love it when Thomas Merton said, you know, it's easy to remain humble when you realize that our well-being is often realized on the backs of many people who suffer. It's humbling to know that and to realize that. That the appearance of things are and are not as they seem. The Buddha was not alone in this. You know, I love Einstein's quote. I use it all the time. He said, you know, time is an illusion, albeit a persistent one. Right? It's an illusion, albeit a persistent one. What does that mean? So let's for a moment take this persistent illusion and tease it apart with some of the teachings around this that we take so for granted. Right? So Master Sing Yun offers this. One could say that time and space are like the act of breathing. Right? We breathe every moment we are alive, but are often not conscious of this action. Right? Time is something that cannot be measured, yet there are those who give it a good try. So for perspective, right? A kasana is said to be the smallest unit of time. Within the context of how we measure time, it is approximately 1/75th of a second. Okay? Kind of like a reflection is a moment of thought. Okay? One human reflection takes up 90 kasanas. Within one kasana, there are 900 instances of arising and ceasing. There are 32,820,000 kasanas in one day. I'm so glad nobody asked me to figure that out. We'd really be in big trouble. So once again, things are not as they seem, nor are they otherwise. You know, keep that close. You know, I talk a lot about the garden because I spend so much time in the garden. I'm the gardener. And at the monastery, I'm one of the lucky ones. And it's such a gift, right? Every day. So I need to remind myself over and over again that when I'm just looking at the flowers in the garden, the reds and the greens and the everything in between, within these kasanas, we are talking about the constantly growing and wilting and the fibers changing kasana to kasana. You know, moment after moment after moment after moment. You know, for me, it's nice to remember and to reflect what I am actually seeing, which is just a small piece of what is actually going on in front of me. It's always humbling. Just a snap of your finger, that, and 63 kasanas have gone by. I mean, we think we know so much. It's just ridiculous. We know so little about what actually is going on in front of our eyes. And at the same time, you know, we're in this human body capable of so much loving kindness. So that's the small stuff. Now, if you're talking about a long time in Buddhism, you're talking about a kalpa. I've always enjoyed the boulder metaphor. You know, it's like you got this granite boulder that is massive, in like the Himalayas, like miles high and miles wide. You got this angel, see, that comes down and with the angel's wing lightly touches the top of the boulder. Right? A kalpa is the time that it takes to turn the boulder into dust by that angel's wing. Okay? All right, so time. This is an elusive thing, and there's an example of how far away we are from when we try and really understand time. You can't understand time. It's beyond that. It's part of the mystery, you know. Always remembering the relativity of things around time. You know, time passes very slowly if you're impoverished or living with an enormous amount of emotional anxiety. And to some, it passes too quickly. Have too much of everything except for more of that which is so elusive, right? There is a beauty in how impartial things we call how impartial this thing time is. You know, this threefold dimension, past quietly gone, will not return. Time of this suchness, who can grasp it? Future doesn't exist, yet you can feel it as it draws closer. You know, I love the way poets speak of this elusive thing called time. You know, Jorge Luis Borges says, "Time is the substance I am made of. Time is a river which sweeps me along, but I am the river. It is a tiger that devours me, but I am the tiger. It is a fire that consumes me, but I am the fire." You know, in the Tang Dynasty, this Mutu says, "The only true fairness in this world is gray hair." Right? "It does not overlook the heads of the rich. Do not complain that we age too easily. Even mountains turn gray sometimes." You know, so all Buddhas throughout space and time, you know, we chant this daily. So here you go from time to space, you know, the phenomenal realm, and they're joined deeply together, right? So a parallel in Judaism would be, talks about needing a Sabbath to survive civilization, right? Abraham Heschel, he says, gallantly, ceaselessly, quietly, we must fight for inner liberty, to be aware of the enslavement of the material world. To be aware of the enslavement of the material world. Inner liberty depends upon being exempt from the domination of things. There are many who have acquired a high degree of political and social liberty, but only very few are not enslaved to things. This is our constant problem. How to live with people and remain free? How to live with things and remain unattached? It's Abraham Heschel. I think it's beautiful. Yeah. So we take this fleeting life moment by moment and spend so much of it on the enticement of all that glitters. You know, whether it be material or mind candy, we love to entertain ourselves, you know. We indulge in that constantly. But anything that keeps us from being where we actually are, you know, in that moment, we constantly need to be reminded of this. You know, we give these talks and these talks go, I love hearing them over and over again because I need to hear them over and over again because I keep slipping back into these habitual patterns. And that keep me from waking up. So the Buddha gives an example of how what we need to stop long enough to listen, to learn, what might be an appropriate and helpful question, right? This is from the Pali Canon. So a monk asks the Buddha, you know, is the cosmos eternal? Or does the Tathagata exist after death? And if you can't answer the question, I will leave the monk life. Right? And so the Buddha looks at the monk and goes, you are like a man stuck by a poisoned arrow who would not have the arrow removed until someone told him the name of the man who had shot him and whether he was tall or short or where he lived. And what sort of feathers were used in the fleshings? And does he have an accent? I mean, you know, it doesn't, what? So, being given answers to those questions would not be helpful, the Buddha replies, because they are not connected to the goal and are not fundamental to the holy life, right? They do not lead to disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, calming, direct knowledge, self-awakening, unbinding. You know, so he continues to talk about skillful and unskillful questions, right? So speculating about the future or the past, or wondering, am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where have I come from? Where am I bound? If someone could just tell me about all of this, I would be happier and less confused. And the Buddha responds, saying, all this gives rise to a wilderness of views that do not help liberate one from dukkha or an unsatisfiedness or longing that keeps us in this realm of suffering, this constant longing. You know, that what is right in front of us is never enough. It seems right around the corner, always, is greed, anger, and ignorance, the three poisons. It's always right around the corner for all of us at all times. And we must be vigilant to be seeing this arise. You know, they are so often the culprit and are played out in a myriad of ways in this world in plain sight if you're awake to it. You know, and that insight into the nature of this existence was a part of the path that helps to liberate ourselves. Turning that endless greed, anger, and ignorance into what could be called virtues, you know, to loving kindness, wisdom, insight, gets flipped if you're awake to it. there's a practice, a path from kind of this very closed, tight system we live in, this madness. You know, the Eightfold Path, beginning with right view or right intention, and the wisdom developed from this right view is seeing things as they are, as opposed to the way that we would like them to be. You know, so often our perceptions are often clouded by opinions which we hold so dear and cling to so tightly. And what the Buddha taught by Rahula, seeing a thing in its true nature without name and label. And how do we do that? You know, well, our practice of meditation, we say, is a fundamental way in. One becomes this practice, and it's personal. It's about our mind, and it's about an experience. It's not about blind faith. It's not about believing in anything. It's a direct seeing. It's penetration. You know, so Bodhidharma, known as the founder of the Zen school, you know, he literally takes the practice of Chan to mean, look at what your mind is doing. Look. See. As he described what he himself was engaged in as he sat facing a blank wall. You know, I recently listened to an interview of these two really bright and wonderful men, one Yuval Harari, and Tristan Harris. This was sent to me by a friend. And Harari is a historian, and Tristan has worked for the Center for Humane Technology. And they were talking about all the various ways we are being kind of manipulated to keep us engaged with our obsession with products, with stuff. You know, it's interesting how there is a way our minds are being hacked. You know, it's really weird hearing this, but, and I don't want to sound paranoid, but it's kind of always thinking, of course, that we have complete free choice. Well, actually, these supercomputers, you know, when you click on YouTube and these patterns give these technologies the inner workings of your personality, right? And they're getting to know us better than we know ourselves. It's always been a fine line whether the power of technology, you know, turns us toward what's good for us or bad. And are we losing our human agency in this present world, you know? There are 1.9 billion people watching YouTube. And this technology, as well you know, is watching what you like and don't like. You know, and using these algorithms and then using what they know about you to sell stuff to you, to who or whatever, you know. These men suggest that one of the antidotes in being manipulated by this is getting to know your own mind. Self-awareness is more important than ever before. Meditation. We're in such a cool thing. Because it's like, you know, we have a way in to deal with this constant abuse of this kind of knowledge and power, this technology, you know. You know, we live in, at the monastery, we live in kind of a bubble. So when I read these things, and you know, we're only on our computers on Hosan, our time off, you know, so the rest of the week we're off of this stuff, most of us. And it's easy to be caught in that bubble and not realize what's going on. And then when I hear these people talking about this present age, I feel I'm a little disconnected. And it shocks me. And people go, yeah, this is what's happening. And I go, is that right? Oh. Oh, my God. How did that happen? And when did that happen? You know, I'm 70 now. And I'm going, huh? This is yesterday was a blink and I was... Anyway. But from the way the world is turning, I think it's time for us all to be at least a bit aware, as you already are. It's time for us to be aware at the monastery. This could be a, you know, dangerous situation. But it's, these gentlemen talk about meditation. They say, know your own mind. And this is what we're about, you know. So Bodhidharma, long before computers and technology, look at what your mind is doing. Don't forget to look. And keep gratitude right in your right pocket, knowing that there is a path to walk. So, you know, for those of you who just arrived here today, you know, if this resonates with you, we're open for business. You know, 6:30 in the morning, 6:30 at night, we sit and we look at our minds. But if it doesn't resonate with you, find a practice that does. Find something that you can relate to, that you can take with you and walk on. Because the world we live in, it's so important now to have a path that you feel strongly about and that you're willing to, you know, work with the highs and lows of this life. So this is from the Mumankan, and I'm going to end with this. It's simple and direct. Spring comes with the flowers, autumn with the moon, summer with the breeze, winter with the snow. When useless things don't stick in the mind, that is your best season. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JIZOPROJECT.